I'm coming from my backyard right now, my very rustic back porch, because I've got house guests here. So apologies for overhead flying things, whether they be bugs or planes. But thrilled to have you guys. We hope that you guys are enjoying this once a month where Moira and I take on all the things that we're watching. And I sometimes think the fur is going to fly because Moira and I don't like the same things is what I'm learning. Mm-hmm. And we said this all this week, we've said everybody's opinion is valid, right? As long as we're respectful. So mm-hmm. we won't throw anything at each other, but I think we have different taste in things as we will find out in just a minute. But as you mentioned, I'd love to start out, which by the way, you guys, we're live right now on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and about a dozen other sites. Don't forget that the show podcast, it's a free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We love it when you guys download, share, like, review on iTunes. Oh my gosh, a review on iTunes. I have a plane. Can you hear it?
Yep.
Is it super loud? I live by an airport. What can I say? But anyway, we love it when you guys review. So please, if you find things that you like here, whether it's on this show or another show on the Autism Network, we love, 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 love reviews. Okay. But Moira, you are someone who has been very involved with TACA. And tell them a little bit about what you do and then give us an update on what's going on. Refresh us on TACA.
What's happening? Yeah. TACA stands for the Autism Community in Action. And it's parents helping parents, caregivers helping caregivers. We're sharing information on how we can help our kiddos on the spectrum be the best they can be. You know, that's really the goal. Independence, health, happiness. Those are all the things we want for our kids. And there's a lot of different ways to work a problem, right? Or an issue or an obstacle, you know? So one of the things we do is we have these monthly learning series, and we have a subject for every month. And right now, this month, it's puberty. So we've got two recorded seminars that are available for viewing as many times as you want through July 31st. You just have to register and you'll have that access. And then we also have two virtual parent meetings for support that are on the topic of puberty. So the information for that's all on the website. Check it out. Join us if you can. And then we are also having several in-person meetings now. We're starting slowly but surely to get back to doing that. We have something we call Coffee Talk, where we have volunteers that sort of host these coffee talks, and they're basically, it's a sharing of information and a time to be able to go like, hey, I heard about this type of therapy. What is it? And what, you know, that kind of thing, and just sharing that kind of information. And that's exciting. So there's several of those. See if there's one near you. And then, of course, our conference coming up in October in Costa Mesa. It is currently $89 per person, and it's a 3-day conference with 4 tracks, 2.5 day, really. The price will increase at the end of this month, so keep an eye out. But when you register, you will receive a coupon code for 25% off for a buddy or a co-caregiver or whomever you wish to give that to. We also have scholarships if money's tight, and it's tight for a lot of us. We're happy to help with that. And then we're also vendored with regional centers. So lots of ways to get that. And it's exciting, you know, to be back in person. I'm a little, you know, I've got my fingers crossed real tight, you know, but yeah, and you know, there's going to be a lot of topics covered, therapies, treatments, adult issues, teen issues, all that kind of thing. So
there's nothing like a TACA conference. Let's just say that. And whether you are new to the community or your child was diagnosed 22 years ago, if you need your battery charged and you want to know what's going on and you want to be with a group of people who will accept you and love on you and your child, then you should get yourself to a TACA conference. There is no conference that is more affordable than yours. And a lot of times I'm not a conference person. I'm just going to be honest. Like, I just don't have the attention span to go. And it's too much for me sensory and socially always to go to a conference and stay for 3 days. But a TACA conference is one where I advocate going and staying for the 3 days. And yeah. Now the planes got really busy. Sorry about that, you guys. But I love a good TACA conference. I have to be honest. I I'm not going to be at this one because I'm at a conference for caregivers, or not for caregivers, yours is for caregivers, for one for therapists and BCBAs at the same time. Otherwise, I would be at that TACA conference with bells on, literally.
Yeah.
So you could find me. But I so advocate for going. We really in COVID pushed hard for families to go to the virtual ones, Moira. Mm-hmm. And I said over and over to people, I'm telling you, if you go to a TACA conference, I promise you it will change your life. Mm-hmm. I promise you, you will get something that will change the direction that you're going for the better. And, everybody wrote back who went and said, okay, I sort of doubted when you said that, Shannon, but that's exactly what they found.
That's good to hear. I'm going to share that with our staff because, you know, everybody's so dedicated, works so hard to give a good space for people to come together and learn. And that warms my heart. We had to pivot. Like everybody had to pivot because of COVID. And honestly, it did open up a different world for us, which I think was a good thing in the long run. And yeah, and the recordings from the sessions will be available at some point after the conference as well. So if you register, you will have access to that. And then I believe we're working on you will be able to purchase them separately for a reduced price after the fact for a certain amount. So,
but if you can go, and you'll be right there by Disneyland. I mean, it's the thing to do.
Yes.
Unless you can't, in which case, you know, try to get the recordings. I think that's super cool. And of course, we showed Traven, he's so on it. He showed the website tacanow.org. But if you guys are listening, you didn't get to see it. tacanow.org for more information about TACA and their conferences and their coffee talks and all of those things. All of which are absolutely amazing. And I really encourage you guys to be involved in TACA. You'll really enjoy it. Really, really enjoy it. Okay, so now we get to talk about movies, which is the thing I look forward to. And movies and television, we're talking about television as well. And I find myself looking forward to this every month. It's sort of like my ice cream. Mm-hmm. It's my palate cleanse. It's my ice cream. It's my treat. That we get to do this, Moira, and that I get to do it with you. Because I don't know about you guys, but I love it when people don't agree with me. I find that exciting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you and I see these things alike, Moira, and sometimes we are on the other side of the planet.
Right.
So we said we were going to start with one movie that both of us would agree to see. And I tried to watch it earlier in the month, and I couldn't get my Apple TV to work because it goes in and it goes out. I don't know, with the internet. What is with the internet? But so I had to watch it late last night. So it's fresh in my mind. Do you want to tell them what we agreed to watch?
Sure. We agreed to watch Cha-Cha Real Smooth, which is, it's got Dakota Johnson, Cooper Rafe, and a lovely gal, Vanessa Burghardt, in it. And it is, it was on Apple TV, like you said. And I'll start. I liked it and I didn't, you know, it was one of those, like, I didn't hate it, you know, but I was kind of like, you know, cause the star Cooper Rafe, he wrote and directed and produced this and starred in it, you know, as well. So I'm like, and he's only 25. So ambitious young man, good for him. He looked a little older to me because he looks like Adam Scott, and Adam Scott is older than him. So I was kind of like, he was playing a 22-year-old just out of college, I don't know what to do with my life kind of guy. And I was like, okay, you know, and yeah, I felt like, you know, we were really watching a charming young man stumble his way through into a job and befriending this, you know, Dakota Johnson plays this melancholy kind of single mom of a gal on the autism spectrum, and he meets them at a bar mitzvah, and, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, I was along for the ride. But I also felt like, they established, that he does gain the trust of this young lady to the point where she allows him to scratch her back. He babysits her and he allows to, well, I shouldn't call it babysitting. He watches her so the mom can have a break. And he scratches her back in the way that her mom normally does. And I know that was to symbolize, look, he's trustworthy and we like him. But I was like, I didn't, that made me uncomfortable. And I was not, and I know that that was not the intent and it was not meant to be uncomfortable. I know that it was this lovely, sweet, heartwarming moment, but I couldn't just, I couldn't let go of like, I wouldn't allow that. I'm sorry, you know? And that was the thing, because, you know, as a parent of a special needs kiddo, there's a very short list of the people that you trust with your kiddo. I mean, even a typical child, it's the same, but it's, yeah, there's just a layer. There's a layer of trust that I just don't have. So, so that's that. But then I also felt it was a little, I don't know, it was a little self-congratulatory in a weird way. Like, he was just so darn adorable, you know? And I was kind of like, okay. And I felt like that whole scene with the back scratching, weirdly enough, it reminded me, there was a scene in There's Something About Mary from a million years ago, where there's a character who has special needs and who is very sensitive to having his ears touched. And they comedically have him have a reaction to that previously. So, you know, don't touch his ears, you know, kind of thing. But at the end of the movie, the Ben Stiller character does touch his ears and he doesn't react. And that's like this sweet little moment of realizing, oh, you know, he's been accepted. So I feel like that was almost done a little better in that scene and less creepy. But what did you think? I'm curious.
So it's so funny that you had this sort of kind of reaction, because everybody that I've talked to has either loved it, mm-hmm. thought it was the most amazing thing, or hated it. Mm. And I got to say that I was somewhere in the middle too. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of a quirky little independent. The thing that's really notable about this is that, as you said, this guy, he's 25 years old. He had a short film that won a film festival, South by Southwest. And then this was his second film, and it won the audience favorite at Sundance. So you kind of have to go, okay, so what's that about if it's the audience favorite at Sundance? This, mm-hmm. I'm talking about Cha-Cha Smooth, Smooth. Won the audience favorite. I think that there were things about it that were super likable. It definitely is one of those films that it's to showcase him. That's really what this film was about. Was it about showcasing this very quirky young man, the way he sees the world. And it's about that time period. It's funny because you're going to talk about a film later on that I've seen your list that I super loved this year. That's about that time period too, when you haven't found the on-ramp onto your life and you don't mm-hmm. quite know what to do next. And I think the film you're going to talk about does it better, but it's everybody's story, right? I think what some people are responding to for this movie is that it's a very big deal in the movie that he is not just okay with spending time with a young girl who's on the spectrum. He's sort of thrilled by her. Right. He thinks she's super. He loves her. You know, she has a quirk that she likes to collect antique potato mashers, and he thinks that's swell. And he's like this with everyone. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's special and unique to her. He sort of kind of wants to know what makes people tick and what's going to make them happy. And he mm-hmm. doesn't quite know what to do with that in his life. So I thought that was an interesting thing that I loved seeing someone who just accepted someone who was on the spectrum, not more or less because they were on the spectrum. That part of it I super liked. I thought that Vanessa Burkhart was truly lovely in the film. And I, you know, some of the reviews that I read, somebody said, well, the autism community deserves better than this, that it should have been more about her. And I got to say, I just want to say for a second that that ticks me off.
Yeah.
It really ticks me off because we need to be able to tell all stories, but it also ticks me off because there is a series that was out from Amazon called As We See It that just focused on three characters on the spectrum and a little bit their caregivers, but mostly on those three characters they did it exactly right. They cast it authentically. And I've been on a soapbox for the last month trying to gain support because it's been canceled. And I can't even get the autism community to sign a petition asking Amazon to rethink it. So I just say to people, I don't know what it is you want,
right?
But you should figure it out, because I think the entertainment world is almost done with everybody complaining constantly, no matter how someone is depicted with autism.
Well, and I think this is the thing, you probably have noticed this too, because it's such a spectrum and because it's so, you know, it's well, that's not my autism.
Right.
I think people look at a depiction and think that's not my autism. So therefore, and I'm like, well, it's all flavors. It's all, you know, so we need to like, and I think having as many stories as possible that are inclusive.
Yeah.
It's always a good thing. Always
and
good.
I loved that. I'm not the biggest Dakota Johnson fan. To me, she's like the Harrison Ford of acting, that they're just, forgive me if you love these people, I'm sorry. They're very compelling on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And they can sit there and breathe and water their eyes, and it's very compelling. I watch and I'm compelled, but they just don't do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I would ever love for Dakota Johnson to say anything that's not a whisper. But I'll watch her. She sits there. She's beautiful. She's compelling on camera, but she just sits there and does the most minute amount of stuff. I thought that there were some great supporting actors. Like, I thought Leslie Mann was fabulous. And I want to say this out loud. Brad Garrett, I thought, delivered one of the best things I've ever seen him do.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the stepdad, because I thought it was nuanced. And I thought it was Brad Garrett playing the straight man, which we don't see a lot. I just thought it was delightful. So I thought a lot of the supporting actors were doing a great job, and that it was totally watchable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was coda. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I didn't change my mind about a whole lot, but I will say that I loved that the mom was very clear that while her life was difficult, she constantly would say, it's not because of my daughter.
Right.
It's not because of my daughter. It's because other things, which I think we can all relate to. And
right.
And was it me that when I saw the trailer, I thought it was her sister? Did Dakota Johnson seem a little young to be this teenager's mom?
She did a little. And I did. I think I had that impression as well, that it was her sister instead of, you know, because it looked like they could have. And that's the thing. He looks a little bit older and she's very young looking. So they could have actually, you know, it wouldn't have been inappropriate. But I think we're supposed to think it was inappropriate.
Exactly. The movie hinges on the fact that they can't be together because of the age disparity between the two of them. And he looks a smidge older than her.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting.
Yeah.
Odd stuff. So, okay.
Moving on.
So moving on, let's get to, there were two things that I really disliked. And you always have more to say about the stuff you don't like, right?
Right.
Since we're talking about Dakota Johnson, one of them was Persuasion, which is the newest adaptation that Netflix has done of Jane Austen's book. And I just think, I think it was Netflix trying really hard to make Jane Austen acceptable for the Bridgerton crowd. And I am a Bridgerton crowd person, and I'm a Jane Austen person, and I watch them for different reasons. And so I feel like they just took everything I loved about Jane Austen away, basically. Like, the language had been kind of stripped from it, and the sort of uptight aspect of society kind of seemed to be loosened, which is, that's what it's all about in that genre. And one of the things they said, like, well, if you're a 5 in London, you're a 10 in Bath, you know, so it was really cheeky. And then one of the things she said was, we were worse than strangers. We were exes. And I'm like, exes. Okay. But the original line is, now they were as strangers, worse than strangers, for they could never become acquainted. I mean, the language is just gorgeous. So
yeah.
I'm like, why'd you do that to me? And attention kind of went away. A lot of times, I think I don't dislike Dakota Johnson. I'm like you. I think I'm charmed by her. I don't know that she's like the most amazing thing, but I think she's lovely and she's watchable. She's compelling. But I felt like she was miscast in this. I felt, and also they did I loved Fleabag. I don't know if you ever saw Fleabag, but there's
love Fleabag.
Saw it like twice. But they did the talking to the camera, breaking the fourth wall thing.
Yes. Yes.
And she handles the comedy of that very well, but it was, I don't know, it just ended up being a little gimmicky. And I thought that Richard E. Grant was fabulous, because he always is. And then I don't know, remember the actress that played the younger sister that had all the maladies and was such a pain. She like stole every scene she was in, you know, so that was interesting. But yeah, she's an internal character, Anne Elliot. And I thought the speaking to the screen might, you know, might work to get her inner workings, but it ended up being just very winky and also lots of anachronisms. She had her hair down a lot of the time. At one point she lifted up her dress to where you could see her stockinged legs to like fix her shoe. And I'm like, oh, you know,
wow. Yeah, you would never.
This would not happen. So, you know, and I'm not a purist. I don't mind, but I'm also like, you got to recognize the, you know, where you are. And in fact, after I watched this, I immediately rewatched Sense and Sensibility because I was like, this is what I wanted to see, and I didn't get to see it. So I did that. So that was a bummer. My second bummer movie was Jurassic World Dominion.
Now, this surprises me because I know how much you were looking forward to this, and I've not seen it yet.
I was very much looking forward to it, but I felt like this was a blatant money grab of a film. Like, let's squeeze the last bits of, you know, dimes and nickels out of this franchise. And I don't care. I love sequels. I don't mind it. I like the franchise, and you're always upping the ante, and they made it a global issue. The opening montage was fabulous because it was kind of showing, here's this world now where the dinosaurs are everywhere. Now we're all dealing with it, and here's what's happening. And I thought that was kind of the direction they were going to go in, but they didn't. And they brought back the three actors from the original film, which I thought, wow, that'll be fun. And then it was like, they didn't really do much. There were people they introduced that I'm like, who is this person and why do I care about them? You know, so it was kind of confused, and sadly, it was actually kind of boring. And I was like, that's not what you want from, you want a roller coaster. You want to be like, oh, people are in peril, scary dinosaur, blah, blah, blah. And it just, I don't know, some of the action sequences were kind of confused, and it almost looked like they were not occupying the same space, the humans and the dinosaurs. And I'm like, is that like, did they cheap out on the CGI? I don't know. It was just, I mean, I did watch it at home, so maybe in the theater that was a different experience. But yeah, I don't know. I can't even remember much of the plot. I thought something about a baby velociraptor and a giant locust, and Campbell Scott was in it. But it was also about corporate greed and human genetic engineering. But I think Universal Pictures is the corporate greed people in this one.
All right. I'm so surprised. And when I saw that on your list, I was like, hey, wait a second. I thought she was looking forward to this. Well, mm-hmm. So for both of these were on my list, and now they're a little less on my list. Mm-hmm. And then on my no list, I think that it's no big surprise. Well, I mean, maybe one of the things on my list was on your wow list last mm-hmm. month. That I specifically went and watched Under the Banner of Heaven. Because I said to Jim, oh, I didn't even know about this. I love Andrew Garfield. And it's a, you know, a detective thing, which he's really into. It's set in Mormon land, 1980, whatever. And I thought, you know, this is going to be my thing. Oh my gosh. I just can't even tell you how much I hated it. Mm-hmm. I just hated it. I even did a review of it. You guys can check it out on braideragency.com. But I hated it. I mentioned this to you when you did the review, that I have a lot of friends who are Mormon that are LDS. And I spent time, I taught at BYU for a while. I spent time living in Utah. I've never been LDS. I'm not a Mormon. So it's not like I'm tied to anything, but I believe in being respectful. And it seems like to me that the person who wrote this had a bone to pick. And mm-hmm. they really wanted to make sure that they made that whole religion look bad. And there were choices that were made in the direction that were just, I'm not a prude at all. But there are things to me that are just wildly, wildly inappropriate. For instance, you know, you can have nudity in a film, and if it belongs in the film, I'm really there. I really hate it when there's gratuitous nudity, and especially when it's female gratuitous nudity. It cheeses me off because, you know, what happens, it pulls me out of the movie, and I'm thinking about the actress who had to make the decision to say yay or nay to this. And I know too many people that have been through that. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment in the this is just one example of many where, for those of you who don't know, at certain echelons of, if you're very devout in the Mormon religion, there are specific underwear that you wear closest to your body because it's sacred. It's mm-hmm. sacred, and that's a really important thing. And they show a scene with the husband and the wife in their sacred underwear, and then they show her take it off to be naked for a second to come in the shower with him. There's really no reason for it whatsoever. That yeah. we didn't like show the underwear and then cut away. There was no, but it was almost like a big middle finger to the Mormon. And that, I couldn't get past it, but the story wasn't for me. By the time, you know, it's a murder mystery. And by the time they get to the end where they're going to reveal who really did it, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I was like, they all are horrible people. Mm-hmm. And they're all, and you're manipulating me. And I really, I was fatutzed by the whole thing. And I did watch the whole thing. So,
Well, you know, it's funny because I hadn't finished it when we talked about it before.
Oh.
But it progressively, I can see where you're coming from. Yeah. And the screenwriter is the same guy that wrote Milk. And he, I think it was intentional. I didn't know this before either. He was a gay man, and I think he had a very difficult time being gay and being in the Mormon church. And I think, I think he's got an axe to grind, and
totally does. And that's fine. That's your story. I'm just telling you, I didn't enjoy it. And then the other one, I may have even mentioned it last time we watched. I love Chris Pine.
Me too.
Oh, I just love Chris Pine. I would watch Chris Pine read the phone book. And so I did watch this. And watching Chris Pine read the phone book would have been more interesting than this movie. The Controller. The Contractor. It's just, I don't know. I don't understand managers of people. Why Chris Pine, sometimes they get him really good things, and then other times they do not get him good things. And Chris Pine, you should fire your manager. This really was a film that was supposed to be set up to make him look good. It didn't. It's, you know, I feel like I understand Chris Pine better than his manager does. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm not a manager and I'm not available, Chris, if you want me to be your manager. But if you want me to read scripts for you and give you thumbs up or thumbs down, I could make myself available for that because I truly love you. And this was a waste of your time. And it was confusing and boring and stupid and ridiculous. And yeah, I didn't care for it at all. But ask me how I really felt. Big no. Okay. Shall we move on to meh?
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah. And it's funny because I have on my list Loot, which is the in Apple TV, Maya Rudolph. And I actually watched another episode last night and laughed out loud. So now I'm like, oh, maybe it needed time to get its legs. I don't know. She's charming. And I think that I would just watch her as well, you know, because I'm like, I just like her. But I do like seeing Adam Scott, as I mentioned him earlier, as a jerky rich guy. I think that's a really good fit for him. But I don't feel compelled to binge it. And I feel like that's an interesting aspect of our virtual world now, is what things would you binge, you know, and like spend a weekend just burning through because you're just so into it, versus what things are you like, oh, I can't wait till HBO releases another Game of Thrones episode or whatever, you know, when they're releasing it one by one. And what stuff gets lost in the shuffle? And I think I think this might have gotten lost in the shuffle, but I kind of went back to it. So I'm like, well, I should give it one more try before I talk to Shannon about it. But
yeah. And I sort of feel like for the meh category, It's some of the, I'm going to talk about things that I quite enjoyed, but they weren't things that I would go wow over.
Yes. But,
right. So Matt is somewhere in the middle. I liked it.
Yeah. Not a totally negative. Yeah. Well, and the same with Marry Me. I feel the same way. I felt like it was kind of exactly as advertised, and that was fine, you know, but I think that I love rom-coms. I think that it's really hard to do a rom-com. And I think that you have to have so many things working correctly. You have to have the chemistry between your stars. They have to have good comedic timing. There has to be funny things about the story, as well as the spark between the two. And I felt like they were both really super charming and I liked them, but I didn't see a spark. And it wasn't funny, particularly. It wasn't not funny. It wasn't a drama, but it wasn't, you know, but I'm a J-Lo fan. I like her, so I'm okay. But like I said, it was a lovely and ultimately kind of forgettable, but inoffensive was the way I described it. And I was, it made me think of, I watched Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum in The Lost City and enjoyed that much more in terms of this genre. It leaned more strongly into the comedy. And I don't know there was much spark between Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, but it was very sweet. The two of them were very sweet together. So anyway, so rom-com's hard, and I'm hard on the rom-coms.
So my meh category is a little bit larger than yours, because I sort of went down the J-Lo rabbit hole. That's where I went. That I don't know why, because I like a good documentary. And I saw Halftime.
Yeah,
and
I did.
And I thought, I want to see that. And I put on Halftime, and then I couldn't stop watching it.
Mm.
And I got to say, I am neither a J-Lo fan or somebody who disses J-Lo. I like her, but I don't go, oh, J-Lo's in that. I got to watch it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I loved her. I feel like I got to know her better on American Idol when she was on American Idol, and I was a bigger fan. I think I just missed like all of the things that she did from being the big J-Lo fan that a lot of my friends are. But so I watched Halftime, and I just thought, wow, that's sort of amazing that she's turning 50 in the documentary. You saw it. And
yeah.
And I love that it was called Halftime, that she's 50 and she was doing the halftime show. I don't watch football, didn't watch the halftime show, wasn't really aware of the fact. I knew that she was doing the halftime show, but wasn't aware of what the theme was, any of that. And what I thought it was, as a documentary, well, I found it interesting. I couldn't stop watching it. And what it did was it made me kind of understand J-Lo's plight a little bit more than I previously had. And it made me a little bit more on her side, which I think is what it wanted to do. Right. And I think it set her up to be looked at for Academy Award status.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was a big, long commercial saying you should not rule her out.
Right, right.
So after watching it, I was like, well, I was going to watch Marry Me. I guess I'll go watch Marry Me. And as soon as I was done with Marry Me, I said, okay, now I got to go watch
Hustlers
to see, you know, to see all of these things. And I got to say, so I put them in the meh category for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that she deserved an Academy Award nomination for Hustlers, but I agree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that she did. And I think she got gypped out of it for various and sundry reasons that they talk about in Halftime. But I'm going to say that the thing that's wrong with Hustlers is the script is weak, and it was partially written by the director. So the director couldn't compensate for what was weak in the script because it was hers.
Right.
And so J-Lo, I've already spoke to Chris Pine, J-Lo, we need to have a conversation. You need to pick a little bit more carefully, either have a different director than the writer so that they can see the mistakes in the writing. But there were big mistakes in the writing that prevented this film from doing what it should have. And it's a waste because J-Lo put it all on the line to do this movie.
She did. Yeah. And they kept comparing it to Goodfellas. And I'm like, not quite. But I'm like, but I also thought to myself, I see why they're comparing it to it, but it didn't quite get there. But yeah, I thought she was amazing, you know.
Well, all of the women in it, and it was, everybody should go watch it because Lizzo is in it, Cardi B is in it. Getting to see all of the dancers, the cameos in it are just insane. They're just really, really wonderful. And Constance Wu is really good in it. But you will see that in the whole thing is sort of told in these flashbacks because they're doing an interview. And so Constance Wu goes back in flashbacks to talk about meeting J-Lo's character. But there is all this, you're waiting for this big reveal about why J-Lo's character is this horrible, horrible person. And I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but the script is El Toro poo-poo. In this respect, it is horribly bad, and it did J-Lo wrong. So but anyway, and I really enjoyed Marry Me. I thought that Marry Me was super cute. I don't understand the Owen Wilson thing. I just have never understood it. Never ever. And I think he's another one that he's certainly charming and he's different. But if he had not had the roommate that he had in college, I don't think he ever would have gotten in any film ever, because he's so quirky. And it sometimes, for me, it's just hard to get past that, to get to the point where I really truly believe that he's head over heels for somebody. He's so busy playing that, you know. So I agree with you. I didn't think the chemistry was quite there. But I think all three of those J-Lo movies are worth watching. And then, of course, my last in the meh category, not hating, but not absolutely wowing about, is Marcel, the Shell with Shoes On. And I got to say, this used to be a short. There were three shorts, and they should have stayed shorts. It is cuter than cute can be. It's absolutely delightful. The message is wonderful. It's way too long. It's way too indulgent. I love, what's her name? Jenny Slate, who does the voice, who's been in a couple of movies that I have loved in the last 2 months. I think she's one of the most versatile up-and-coming actresses we have. And she does the voice of Marcel, and it's just adorable. But it's not a kids movie. It's an adult movie with adult things. Kids won't sit for it. It's cute as a button, but it's a long movie, and to ask adults to sit and be cute for that long, it's a short. But they decided to make it a full length feature. God bless you. Stay a short. But it was cute. But it was cute. It was cute. So cute. You have diabetes by the end. But I can only handle so much of that. It's like having cotton candy for your appetizer, your meal, and then they offer it for dessert, and you go, "I'm done."
Yeah.
All right. There was that.
All right. So next is our wow category, and I loved The Worst Person in the World. I thought that was fantastic. I had heard a lot about it. I think you actually had said how amazing it is. It's, for those that don't know, it's in Norwegian, so you will be reading subtitles. There is nudity. It's an adult, a grown-up film. It is so good. And at the beginning, we're told it's in 12 chapters with a prologue and an epilogue, so they kind of set you up for that. And the prologue was so reminiscent of Woody Allen that I was actually a little worried there might be an inappropriate age gap with, you know, like, is this, you know, because she's, like you said, exactly, she's experiencing what the character in Cha-Cha Real Smooth is, which is, I'm in college, I don't know what to do. And then she tries on all these different things, and you see this montage of her figuring it out. And then all of a sudden you're at a different point in her life where she's like, trying to figure out, like, am I a grown-up now? Do I need to make these, you know, big life-changing decisions for family, for whatever? And it was so interesting. And in a way, she could be kind of labeled as the manic pixie dream girl, you know, because she's, you know, whimsical. But the actress, Renata, I don't know how to say it, Ryzensev, she manages to keep the character of Julie grounded. And I think that was an amazing feat, even in her most kind of what the heck is going on here moments. She knows who she is. This character knows who she is and knows what she will or will not put up with, but she just doesn't know what her life is supposed to be. So that was kind of cool. And one review I read of it mentioned that it might be a little bit of the male perspective of a woman's experience because it was written by a man. But I think she did a great job of, like, I was there for it, and I thought she was fabulous. And there were some really great magical movie moments where you're inside a really crazy drug trip, and you're like, what is going on with that? And then also a literal and figurative light bulb moment that I think is just magical. Movie magic at its best. I just thought it was, you know, great. And it was much more successful than Cha-Cha Real Smooth, and, you know, a whole other league You know, so I really enjoyed that one.
It was one of my favorite movies of the last season, and I was lobbying hard. I thought it should have won Best Foreign Language Film. It did not, because that car movie won, which, you know, hop to the car, which was way too long. I absolutely thought it was one of the best things that came out.
Well,
last
it makes
year.
Me want to watch this director's other two films, because they said Joachim Trier. This is kind of the third of his kind of accidental Oslo trilogy. And I'm like, okay, well, I might have to watch the other ones.
Yeah, me too.
She's in one of the other ones. So I might do that.
I loved it.
It was great. And I thought some of the imagery in that was so bold that I've never seen before. And I was like, oh, I love this. You know, I loved it. Very good.
Can I tell you, I watched it the same week that I watched West Side Story, and everybody hated the fact that I was so hard on West Side Story, because I was like, look, in this movie, you've got this many seconds to make lightning happen between these two characters. And if you don't make that lightning happen in that first little scene, then I'm not going to believe everything that happens after that. And everybody's like, well, it's written, right? Whatever. And in this movie, there is The Worst Person in the World, there is a scene where she meets someone and it's maybe 6 minutes long or less. And it builds
beautifully. And it's like, wow, it was so odd. And it was so, it was so well done. And you could have not liked either one of them because of the, you know, but you did. And, you know, I don't know, very well done.
I loved it.
And the other one I loved was Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. And that's I love Emma Thompson. Amazing, as usual. Anything she is in, I'll watch. Daryl McCormick is the gentleman that plays Leo Grande. And he is one to watch. Not only is he incredibly handsome, he had a wonderful subtlety to his performance that I very much enjoyed. The film, you know, it's focusing, I think it's going to be considered really brave and groundbreaking, because it's focusing on a newly widowed woman in her 60s who's trying to figure out how to have an orgasm, you know, sexual satisfaction. And there's also a very vulnerable nude scene in it of Emma Thompson. And I'm like, I wish that wasn't considered so brave. I just wish we were just covering these stories. But again, I'm glad we're doing this great storytelling. It's very much structured like a play, because I kind of felt like I was watching a play. All the action takes place in a hotel room where they meet. And I looked it up and it was not a play. So I'm like, okay, because it could have been. And each interaction, each session where they're together, and it progresses so beautifully. And the back and forth between the two of them is great. You know, she decides to hire a sex worker, and he is her sex worker to sort of do all the things she didn't get a chance to do before. And she describes her marriage as comfortable but lonely. It sounded kind of lonely. And she's a retired religion teacher who actually spoke to her students about the ethics of sex work and everything, but also admits to kind of shaming the girls for wearing short skirts and being a little bit of a prude. And so it's a great arc to see her go, you know, kind of come to herself, you know. And there's a speech that Leo makes about what he gets out of being a sex worker. And it reminded me of the speech in American Gigolo where Richard Gere talks about working, you know, why he does the work. But the American Gigolo speech was more about, because I'm this good and I can do this, is why I should do it. Whereas Leo seemed to have a talent to actually see his clients and know who they were. And he's a lovely character. I'd love to think he was real, but I kind of feel like he's like the perfect, but if there's a moment where you see a vulnerability, and I loved it. And I'm just glad, and I want, we need to not be squeamish about talking about these things, right? You know?
I really want to see it, and I want to see it more now that you've talked about it. Mm-hmm. So for my wow categories, and I sort of teased this last month because I had just seen the movie before we came, and so I didn't have my thoughts together, but I got to make sure that I say that it's definitely a wow for me for the everything, everywhere, all at the same time.
Yeah.
Whew, what an amazing tour de force that film is. And actually, both of the films that I'm going to talk about, I got to say, and this is a part now of whenever I'm watching films, because I don't know if you saw the documentary called This Changes Everything.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
And every time I watch a movie now, I always come to a movie as a woman watching. I come as a mom watching. And I look at things in a different way, having seen that documentary that's made by, help me, who's the actress?
Gina Davis.
Thank you. That she's done a lot of research on gender studies in film and paid a lot of money to have that research done. And you would think it would be changing things, but it isn't fast enough. But both of my wows, I feel like, are part of the change. So Everything, Everywhere, all at once. Mm-hmm. We get to see, and I'm going to slaughter her name, Michelle Yeoh, who has been around, done a lot of things, is an amazing actress in her late 50s, mm-hmm. is the lead of this action hero film. And mm-hmm. she does a lot of her own stunts in it. It's absolutely amazing. And then a lot of times her foil in a lot of the scenes, sometimes playing the villain and sometimes not playing the villain, is Jamie Lee Curtis, who is also not in her 20s anymore. Mm-hmm. And to see these two women, you know, when we were told that Wonder Woman 84 was coming out and that it was going to be, I'm blanking on Kristen Wiig and Fabulous, who's the woman who plays Wonder Woman?
Gal Gadot.
Oh, yeah, Gal Gadot. And that they were going to play the two superheroes against each other. I was so looking forward to it. I was looking for that moment, like when Gal Gadot went across the field, right? Like,
yes,
right. Uh-huh. I was looking for that, and it had Chris Pine, and yet the whole thing was a ginormous, you know, like throw it. It doesn't even belong in the horse poop pile, right? but everything, everywhere, all at once was what I had hoped that movie would be.
Ooh.
But. Times 754 million. It is the most empowering, I think, film for women that I've seen in a long time, whether it's, you know, the story or the actresses and what they're doing. Amazing. But it's also cutting edge filmmaking, storytelling. It's not a movie you can watch once. It's a movie that you're going to have to watch like 22 times to catch all the nuance in it, but it's worth it. I absolutely love it. And Jenny Slate is in it too. And you almost wouldn't recognize her in it. Because a lot of times she plays the quirky, not beautiful. She plays the beautiful girl in it. And I was like, is that Jenny Slate? Totally wonderful seeing her do that as well. Great. Very small cast, but everybody who's in it is on point. They must have had so much fun on that set and so much creativity. Absolutely, absolutely love it. Make sure you guys see it because it's available widely now. Yeah. And then the other one we just watched last night, The Sea Beast.
Hmm.
And I had heard some good things about it. It's on Netflix right now. It is a family-friendly film, so you can watch this with the kiddos. And I just loved the message and the thesis of this film so hard. I watched it with my entire family, plus my two grandnieces that are staying with us. And everybody loved it. We talked, had this big conversation afterwards about what we got out of it. And everybody got something on a different level. Just stunningly, it's beautiful. My husband kept saying, oh my gosh, it's just so beautiful. But I also loved the way women are depicted in this film. Oh my gosh. So loved this, loved the message. I also think that it says something really important. We are in such a cancel culture now about, well, let's find one thing, you know, and look, there are some people that need to be canceled, but it's like, let's go look at heroes that we had and look at everything that they did, and then we'll cancel and do all this. And I think this film has a really important message, because at one point the star of it and it reoccurs throughout the whole film, but she, and it's in the trailer, so I'm not spoiling everything. She says, maybe it's possible to be a hero and still make mistakes.
Still make mistakes. Love it. Love it.
Maybe both of those things are possible, and mm-hmm. or and still be wrong, she says, mm-hmm. and still be wrong. I think there's an important message about we've all been told this, but maybe it's not the truth. But the message about how women are depicted is off the charts. So much of the time we see, you know, okay, so there's a female lead in an animated film and we go, oh, well, good. And the message isn't always there. This is on point. Love it.
Wonderful. I'm excited because that Jurassic World was our family movie that we all watched, and my son enjoyed it, but you know, he enjoys the dinosaurs, so he's happy for that. But it's so nice when I find a movie where we can all actually really authentically enjoy, and yeah. That's it sounds like that could be it, you
we
know
all we're leaning yeah. forward all yeah. of us so okay. yeah okay right. So now moving forward with looking at what are you looking forward to watching? What's on your list?
I put on a couple of things. I put Don't Make Me Go, which is a film with John Cho. And it looks like it's a father-daughter road trip. And it looks emotional. And I love John Cho. So I'm like, okay, I'm going on that one. The Woman King, Viola Davis, based on real events. And it's about fierce all-female warriors in 1800s Dahomey. So I'm like, I want to see that. And I think this is where the Black Panther, the inspiration for the women guard that guard the Black Panther. So I'm interested in that. And I love Viola Davis. And then Gentleman Jack, we actually started it. And it also does the breaking the fourth wall Fleabag thing. And it is a period piece, but it does it so much better than Persuasion did. And I'm very much enjoying it. And it's, you know, it's very interesting. It's fun. So very doing cool. that. So those are mine.
Have you watched the Viola Davis with Oprah yet? The interview?
I did. I did. She's amazing. I saw a while back, wasn't it? Because I feel like it's been a while.
It's been a hot minute. But oh my gosh, if people haven't seen that. Oh my gosh. Viola Davis just does not know how to hold back, man. She's an all or nothing actress, all or nothing in that interview. That's life changing listening to her talk. Ooh, that it took me a while to get over it. I kept talking to people for days. I just kept talking about it. But okay. So my looking forward, I said this last time, I'm still trying to get my body to Elvis. I am a Baz Luhrmann fan.
And I am too.
So I rewatched Australia recently to remind myself why I'm a Baz Luhrmann fan. So I really want to see Elvis. I've heard good reviews and bad reviews, but I really, really want to see Elvis. I also have not yet seen Lightyear, and I'm going to get myself to the movie theater to see Lightyear. Mm-hmm. And again, I've heard a lot of things, mostly good, but a little bit of people not liking. Strangely enough, I want to see The Gray Man. I'm not sure why I want to see The Gray Man, but I've seen a preview of it, and I know that I want to see it.
Okay. So, I haven't even heard of that. Okay.
Well, it's coming out, like, I want to say today, tomorrow, whenever, very soon. And it's going to be in the movies and stream at the same time. I kind of love that when they give us the choice. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, absolutely love. I do want to say, too, I'm a big fan of shorts. And today, when this airs today, they start the Los Angeles Shorts Festival here in Los Angeles. And in the very first block of films that's showing at 1 o'clock today, when you guys see this, one of our regulars here on the show, Spencer Hart, is featured in a film that's playing in LA Shorts. I can't wait to see it and see her and celebrate her. You guys can watch her and our Stories from the Spectrum. She has a little interview show that she's doing there, short interviews, but the first episode, Heart to Heart, just aired, and you guys can watch that on our Stories from the Spectrum. I love shorts. Do you love shorts?
I do. We actually own all the Disney Pixar shorts on Blu-ray. You know, I mean, now we have the Disney Channel, so we have them there too. But yeah, I love. I think it's a special talent to write a short and make it powerful, you know, and emotional. I love it.
We had the director of Loop, one of the Pixar shorts that had to do with a nonverbal character. Mm-hmm. She did the show with us, and it was so much. I don't think anybody does shorts as well as Pixar because they invest in it. Yes. They have a program where artists can flush out ideas, and they sort of have an incubator, mm-hmm. if you will, to do shorts, which I think helps them to go into their full-length films. And it's part of why Pixar does it so well.
The farm team, they're building their future storytellers for feature length. And in fact, I believe one of the gals from the Red Panda, that movie had been a short person as well. And that was wonderful. So
I had to think, it's Erica Milsom that was on with us from Loop. She was just amazing. And I think she's just been finishing a documentary about Disney and about one aspect of it. And I can't remember what, but I love shorts, and there are so many different categories for shorts, right? Because there's documentary short, there's mm-hmm. animated short, there's live action short. And then there's one more. Why can't I think what it is? But I absolutely enjoy it. And I love every year there comes a day when after the nominations have come out where they will just play them back to back in the movie theater. And you can
move through. Yeah, we did that one year back in the day before kids.
Yeah. But afterwards, after the Academy Awards are over, they will offer it online. So mm-hmm. if you're interested at all in watching the shorts this year, I was so excited that Riz Ahmed finally won his Oscar for his short called The Long Goodbye, which if you guys have not seen, I don't think it's longer than 10 minutes. It's like the best 10 minutes you could spend
to watch
your short. Oh,
I love him. I just think he is, I don't know if you saw The Night Of, that was the first time I was introduced to him, and I went, who is this kid? He's fabulous. And then of course, Sound of Metal, he was amazing. And then he was in Star Wars. He was in Rogue One.
Right. Well, and then, but it was almost like I said, you know, it was like Riz Ahmed was like, I'm going to win an Oscar in 2022 because I didn't win one in 2021 for Sound of Metal, mm-hmm. because he was also a producer for Flea, which was up for Best Documentary, which was up for Best, right?
Yes. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so a lot of people thought, but you know, he was up in so many categories for Flea, and I knew that there was just like in each category there was a film who was going to edge him out, but I like there was no way he wasn't going to win for Best Short. His was by far the best. There were so many good shorts this year. I was just amazed. But we're about out of time here. So I just want to say that for people who are interested in more information, Moira is very active in TACA, and tell them how they would find more information about what you do at TACA.
Well, it's on the website, but also my TACA email is my first name, Moira@TACANOW.org. And I'm better with email. So, you know, that's something you can always shoot me an email and say hello. I can, you know, like I said, there's tons of info on our website. So, you know, it'll take you forever to go through it all. There's so much. So, yeah.
There we go. And I now review regularly as a plane is about to go over. I review regularly, and you can find my reviews either on my Facebook, because I usually share them, or they're on braideragency.com. If you're interested, and mine are always short. They're never longer than a 3-minute read, because who has the time? And I can tell you, like when I'm speaking verbally, it takes me an hour to tell you. But if I'm writing, I can tell you in 30 seconds, did I like it? Did I want to flush it down the toilet? Or was it really good and you should watch it? So Moira, I so enjoy this.
I know, this is my treat. Every month I'm here for it. I am here for it.
So we'll be back in August. And if there's something that you guys particularly want us to watch, we will take requests.
I would
if we can find it.
Yeah.
If we can find it. if we're able to see it, with schedule allows, right? But thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow on the show, you guys are going to see Stories from the Spectrum again, and you can watch Spencer Hart, and who is featured in the LA Shorts. So we hope that you'll check that out. And then we will be back live with a show on Monday. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Thank you so much for being here, Moira.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye for now.